Blog Talk Radio.
From deepest, darkest Africa, across the polar ice cap, spanning the jungles of South America, without a compass, without a map, Blog Talk Radio and Wildlife Educational Services presents Larry Batson's Wild World. Discover the wonders of the natural world with nationally known wildlife educator Larry Batson as we visit his wild world.
Hello, everyone, from the remote jungles of Clinton Falls, Indiana. This is Larry Batson, and you are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network known as Blog Talk Radio. And we have a fantastic show tonight. Joining us in just a few moments, from Hawaii and Oregon, the Dragon Brothers are here. We're going to be talking about their exciting new album and lots of great stuff, stories from Malibu and the rock world. It's just going to be a fast hour, everybody, so we hope you have a comfortable seat. And a big hello to all of our listeners in Australia, New Zealand, Ireland, England, and all across North America. Handling the technical responsibilities, Melissa Hovey and Wayne Larson. We do appreciate the hard work that they put into our program every Thursday night at 10 p.m., and our music editor, Jim Johnson. And from his massive Wild World News studios in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished and honorable Dr. Henry Day. Good evening, Doctor.
Good evening, Mr. Batson.
Wow, we have an exciting program tonight.
I agree. I'm looking forward to it. I want to hear what the boys have to say.
Oh, it's going to be great. We were talking, we've had their album, The Profiteer, for now, probably a little over a month, and we have listened and listened and listened, and you had an analogy of the album that you had told me earlier.
Well, the first time we listened to the album, you brought it by. We listened to it here at my place, and the first time I listened to it, I listened to the words,
mm-hmm.
and enjoyed it, really enjoyed it. The second time I listened to it, I heard more of the music. I appreciated the music. And by the third time I listened to it, I put the music and the words together, and it gets better and better every time I listen to it.
It does. I'm telling you, it's that album is special. And I hope our listeners around the world will be able to either find out where to download it, we'll tell everybody tonight, or to buy that album, because it's a dandy, and we're looking forward to having the Dragon Brothers with us tonight.
They will enjoy it, without a doubt.
As we said, highly entertaining.
Agreed.
Yes. The following portion of Larry Batson's Wild World is brought to you by our brand new children's book, Alphabet Swamp, the new children's book by my dear wife, Cheryl, and myself. Cheryl writes them. I illustrate them. Order your autographed copy today at www.larrytheanimalguy.com or send a check or money order for $10, that's all, per copy to WES 4140 North 600 West, Greencastle, Indiana, 46135, shipping and handling included.
It's now time, from his broadcasting mecca in Indianapolis, Indiana, the distinguished Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News.
Good evening. This is Dr. Henry Day with the Wild World News. Well, Mr. Batson, would you like to learn how to pick up chicks tonight?
No, I'm sorry, I'm married.
For our listeners, if anybody wants to learn how to pick up chicks, you're going to have to move to San Diego, California. And why? Well, that's because the California condor population has increased by two.
Oh. Well, that's
two new chicks were born at the San Diego Safari Park. Now, two other eggs are in incubators.
Uh-huh.
The park has hatched 165 chicks since the 1980s, when the last 22 California condors were placed in the zoo's captive breeding program. Now, today, to date, we have about 370 condors in captivity and in the wild.
Well, that's exciting. You know, we had David Klinger, the senior writer for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, on a few weeks ago, and he talked about being in on that project and how scary it was to basically capture all the California condors out of the wild, and the responsibility of the San Diego Wild Animal Park was to propagate them, and it has been a success.
Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
All right. The next story I call, and they don't know why. Portland, Maine. Now, for some reason, harp seals from Canada are showing up in the U.S. waters in greater numbers and further south than usual. And the biologists, they want to know why.
Yes.
Says Mindy Guerin of the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Well, why? They don't know why.
We don't know why.
Well, but, if I was guessing, I would say there's some type of food source that is causing them to move their boundaries.
See, they don't need to research anymore because that's exactly what I would say.
Yes, that's what I would say, too.
All right, now we're going to call this next story the Funky Junky Monkey Award.
Oh!
We're going to Denton, Nebraska.
Okay.
Chimpanzee expert Jane Goodall was honored by the Lincoln mayor for her dedication to conservation. Chris Butler presented Goodall with the mayor's medallion this last Saturday at the Spring Creek Perry Audubon Center in Denton. Goodall was in Lincoln area for a lecture at Nebraska Wesleyan University.
Well, that's exciting. We've invited her to be on the show, but she spends too much time in the jungle.
We wish we were as lucky as her.
Yeah, no kidding.
All right, this next story I'm going to call Snakes on Fire?
Uh-oh.
Question mark. Phoenix, Arizona. Warmer temperatures are bringing out the snakes. The Arizona Republic News reported that the Scottsdale Fire Department has been receiving 10 to 15 calls a day requesting the removal of snakes from homes. Now, the snake season runs to the end of October when the temperatures consistently drop below 80 degrees,
mm-hmm.
which doesn't make a lot of sense to me because you'd think as it get cooled off, the snakes would want to go into the houses.
Yeah. Well, there has to be, once again, it's like the harp seals. There has to be a reason that those snakes are heading in that direction. And my guess would be food.
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's what I'm thinking. There must be a rodent population.
Oh, yeah.
That's out of control.
That's right.
All right, we'll call this a short tail. Laconia, New Hampshire. Department of Fish and Game and the University of New Hampshire are planning a four-year study to learn why the number of bobcats is increasing in the state. Now, the bobcats will be trapped and given an ear tag and a GPS collar before release. Now, here we go again.
Well, they're protected, and they're not killing them, and there's enough wild spaces for them that they're going to do well. And we've run into that here in Indiana. As soon as they started protecting them, the population has gone up because there's a food source. So it's all pretty basic, you know. There's food for them to eat.
Good for those little guys.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, we're going to swoop into Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. A pair of red-tailed hawks has returned to its unusual urban nest on a ledge at the city's Science Museum for the third straight year. The Franklin Institute has a webcam that allows thousands of bird lovers to watch the hawks raise their young. The female has laid two eggs since last week. Now, the baby hawks are expected to hatch in late April.
Well, that's fantastic. And they have a webcam.
Yep.
And what? And do you have a site for that?
Well, all you have to do is go to Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.
Yeah.
And the Franklin Institute, and they'll hook you up.
Okay, cool. We'll do that.
All right, now here locally we have a soap opera going on. We'll call it Falcon Crest.
Uh-oh.
Our downtown Falcons here in Indianapolis have this year's first egg. The star couple of the Falcon Cam have welcomed their first egg of the year. The red egg in a nest of the two peregrine falcons, Kenny and Kathy Q, was found this last Sunday morning. A volunteer with the State Department of Natural Resources who writes the Fountain blog at IndyStar.com, if you want to pick up the Falcons downtown. Now, the egg was laid between 11:30 and midnight this last Saturday. It'll be the first of like four eggs.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to view the falcons as they raise the babies, you go to IndyStar.com Falcon blog.
Oh.
And there'll be a blog on the falcons. And the falcons nest in a plywood box, which is on the 31st story of Market Tower, which overlooks our beautiful downtown monument.
Well, that's fantastic.
Now, also here locally, we have a story, and we're going to call this one Beetle Bailey, Indianapolis, Indiana. Yep. Natural Resources Commission restricted the type of firewood that can be used at the state-owned properties to protect them from the spread of the emerald ash borer, the gypsy moth, and other pests and pathogens that can be transported in firewood. Now, bundled firewood with a U.S. Department of Agriculture or state stamp can be brought into our state parks.
Well, it's spreading, and that's one of the ways they're hoping to fight this problem, because it's a problem, absolutely.
Gotten completely out of hand.
And
Dennis and Doug can probably tell us a little bit about that.
I'm sure
they
can.
Now, here's something that you'll think about right before you fall asleep tonight.
Uh-oh.
A cat has 32 muscles in each ear.
Really?
Really.
Wow.
Now, here's something. Here's one more question for Dennis and Doug. Now, you know the expression, when pigs fly?
Yeah.
Would you call that the swine flu?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, whoa.
I like that.
That's deep.
Well, that's the wild world news for tonight, gentlemen.
Fantastic job, Dr. Henry Day. Brought to you by our brand new book, Alphabet Swamp. Also, check out my website, LarryTheAnimalGuy.com, and a brand new Facebook page, Larry the Animal Guy and Friends, filled with photos and information about our animal family. We'd also like to thank McGregor Mountain Lodge in beautiful Estes Park, Colorado, on the boundaries of Rocky Mountain National Park. That's God's country, everybody. Go to their website, info@McGregorMountainLodge.com. And if you've never been to that part of the country, the beautiful Rockies of Colorado, you need to do that at least once in your lifetime. Also, Santee Cooper Country in beautiful South Carolina. Lake Marion and Lake Moultrie, known as Santee Cooper Lakes, 171,000 acres, 450 miles of shoreline, fantastic fishing, amazing golf. Go to their website at www.santeecoopercountry.org. Those are a few of our underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
I can't hear you, but I know you're with me right here. I can't even see you, but I feel your presence near. Good time, woman.
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 Rock and roll, but he tries not to let
The amazing sound of the Dragon Brothers from their new album, Profiteer. Doug joining us from Hawaii and Dennis from Oregon. Guys, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you for having us.
Oh, my Lord, this is fantastic. I've become...
It actually works.
It does work. You know, that's saying something some weeks, I'm telling you. But it's great to have you on the program. And Dr. Day and I have become big fans of the album, and I'm telling all of my listeners around the world, get this album, because it's absolutely fantastic.
Well, I'm glad you like it, and Doug, I think, thinks the same.
Yeah, that's good, Larry. That's good input. And it was about a year and a half in the making.
It was,
oh, no, it's actually 50 years and a half.
Well, yeah, because I was reading here in the information that was sent to us by Mr. Carr, that your publicist, that Radiation Blues was written in the 50s. Is that correct, Doug?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was during the bomb shelters here.
Wow, you had some you had some ESPN or something.
I don't know what that was, but it was so obvious, like everybody was making bomb shelters and you know, the Cold War was on and you know all that, so I just...
It's funny, that song never got recorded until just recently either. It was written, I remember Doug played it in the late 50s and early 60s, was kind of like a cool song to play at parties and stuff, but it never got recorded until about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago.
I bet that was a lot of fun to finally put that in the recording process and put that all together.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, now, Doug's the one that wrote all the tunes, and some of the tunes go back that far. Some of them were written just recently. So it was stuff that Doug had in his head, and he basically, well, should I tell him the real story, Doug?
Yeah.
Okay, here's the skinny on this one. Doug basically forced me into recording this thing because he would put some tracks down with his buddies over in Hawaii, like piano, reference drums, a bass, and his vocals, and he'd send them to me for, was it my approval, or what was the deal there, the original deal?
Well, for your scrutinization, just to get some feedback.
Oh, right, okay, scrutinization. So I go, okay,
is that a word?
It's scrutinizing time, so I put the scrutinizer on.
Yeah.
And you know, to back up a second, I'm an engineer producer. I did all my work in Hollywood and stuff like that, and I lived in Malibu and I had studios for years. And I just couldn't take the Southern California scene anymore, so I moved it all up to Southern Oregon, where you know people speak English and stuff.
Right.
And you know, it's kind of fun up here. And you know, there's oxygen to breathe. You know, trees that grow. It's kind of nice. I like it.
I'll bet.
So I took over Steve Miller's studio. He built it in the 70s, and he vacated it about 15 years later. And I was lucky enough to find this place and set up shop here. So I had a studio going, and first, you know, I was in storage for years, and I just got depressed. So I didn't have a studio. So I go, hey, I got a studio again. Hooray, let's get to work. So I told Doug this, and then he starts sending me these tracks. And so the scrutinizer got turned on, and I go, okay, I guess we're going to work on the Doug Dragon album.
Yeah, that's the way it was.
And
luckily, I had a lot of good people up here and still do, musicians, that contributed on that album that were available at the time to help out, bass players, keyboard players, horn players, guitar, etc. And it was just really, it was not a miracle, but it was just synchronicity maybe comes to mind, because we had the tracks. Doug sent me this stuff, and I go, you know, I got to go to work here, and luckily the people were here to help, and that's what I'm really thankful for.
Well, my understanding is basically, Doug, you emailed these tracks to your brother.
I mailed them to Dennis. Yeah.
Yeah. And
no,
so,
can we talk about the other brother, Doug?
You mean Daryl?
You mean the captain?
Oh yeah. Well, we were going to bring up.
No, well, he may have heard them, but he didn't contribute to them.
No, he had a chance to, and we really wanted him to be part of this album, but for some reason he just wasn't together, you know, together enough to help out, I guess. I don't know what the story is.
Yeah.
Well,
but yeah, so yeah, Doug sent a couple of some things to him and me, and I took the ball and ran with it, because Doug and I are very close. We've been well, from forever. I mean, when he was in the Navy in the late 50s, he brought me back from Japan my first stereo set, and I couldn't believe it when it was giant. You know, I was like 12 or 13 at the time, and I was just blown away by what he had done for me, and I go, man, this guy's really cool.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's give some of our listeners some of the background, your musical background you guys have put together. I mean, it's quite impressive. You toured with the Beach Boys. I was reading some notes here that, Dennis, you were kind of hanging around when Neil Young was putting Southern Man together.
Well, yeah, Doug and I were off and on the road with the Beach Boys in the late 60s and the early 70s, and so was Daryl, and we were all part of the Beach Boys support team. I was percussionist, Doug was keys, and Daryl's keys.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I just to cut to the to the Neil Young story, the Buffalo Springfield were on the tour with us along with the Strawberry Alarm Clock. I'll never forget that tour. And for some reason, after one of the shows in the South, I forget what state it was. You know, we all went out to have a bite to eat at one and two or two in the morning or whatever rock and rollers were doing.
Yeah.
And we found ourselves, Neil Young, I, and a couple of other guys from the band, found ourselves in some dive. I don't know how or why, but there we were eating and having a drink. And there are some good old boys. And this is late 60s type stuff sitting across the way.
Yeah.
And they were eyeing us long hairs.
Yeah.
And I heard one of them say, yeah, you get the guy with the long black hair, I'll take care of the curly-haired one, which was me. And I go, oh, man, we are in trouble now. Because we didn't have, you know, we just didn't have any backup here. So just out of just luckicity, in walks Charlie Brown. Do you remember Charlie Brown, Doug?
I don't remember Charlie Brown.
Well, Charlie Brown was a big guy, and he was part of the Beach Boys road group, you know, the roadies.
He
walks in and saved our asses. That was when they saw him, their little plans kind of backed off. But at that moment, I think in time and maybe shortly after that, Neil Young definitely wrote the lyrics and the words to, I mean, the music to Southern Man. That was the zone. We were there.
Well, your dad was
He was a nice guy. Very, very charismatic, and he stayed the course. He kept on performing, and you know, for a while there it was a little rough for him because there was the Crosby, Stills, Nash, but no Young, and then there was Young, and then there was no Young, and then there was Young, and then there was no Young. So he pretty much branched out on his own, but that was a pretty incredible era.
Oh,
yeah, I thought it was. I mean, I was grabbing some pictures. You know, I'd carry a camera with me, and I recently looked through some pictures. I might get those out. I was taking black and whites of that whole tour, and there was some interesting stuff there.
Yeah.
Well, the history behind the Beach Boys, and then you put Buffalo Springfield. I mean, my musical recollection is Stephen Stills is in that band.
Oh, yeah.
And the Strawberry Alarm Clock. Now, I think they may have been a one or two hit wonder. I'm trying to think.
Well, yeah, you're close. They two is pretty good. They had Incense and Peppermints and I forget, Tomorrow or one of the others. Ironically, I've stayed in touch with the bass player of that band over the years.
Mm-hmm.
His name is George Bunnell.
Mm-hmm.
And I just finished mastering last month their next CD, which is coming out, which has got some wild stuff on it.
Really?
So they're still recording.
They are.
Better than ever.
They've toured all along?
I don't know if they've toured. They've been, they stayed in touch. But they really want to get back to touring. I mean, they're ready to rock again. I mean, then they're sounding good. So for what it's worth, there you have that.
For what it's worth.
that was Buffalo Springfield. Sorry. But yeah, it was fun getting to know Neil and Steve and all that. And one of my great moments in rock and roll was I guess on one of those tours, the Buffalo Springfield basically was breaking up. Were you on that tour, Doug? I'm not sure.
Yeah, I was. Neil was kind of a little bit depressed, and there was something in the air, and they weren't talking about it. But you know, within about a month or two, it came to fruition, and they broke up.
Probably.
There it is, and I'll never forget Steve Stills coming up to my hotel room and saying, "Hey, Dennis," knowing that I was a percussionist with the Beach Boys, right? He goes, "Dennis, we're starting a new band. Do you want to be a member of it?" And I go, sorry, Steve, I got to hang at the beach. So I don't know if that was a great moment for me or a bad moment. Because that band was definitely Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Oh, my God.
Well,
I think it was a good thing. I think I wasn't that, I wasn't the right drummer for that band anyway.
Well, it, the Beach Boys, you would have guaranteed steady employment.
Not necessarily.
Really?
Not really. It was a side deal for all of us, all the Dragon Brothers. I mean, if Daryl would have stayed with it, he would never would have met Tony, so the Captain's Neil would have never happened. Mm. If I would have done it, it would have been a career thing that would have stopped me from doing my studio work, which I love, my producing and my engineering and my beach time, which I really, you know, valued. Mm. And Doug, fill in the blank.
Yeah, well, Doug just gave notice. I said, this isn't for me.
Right, so it really wasn't for us.
You mean it wasn't fun?
Ooh.
Well,
Daddy took the T-Bird away and it was over.
it was fun, Larry. Don't get me wrong. They paid the bread and butter, and they paid well, and it was a good gig. But I just wasn't getting off on the music, and, you know, you can only play Help Me Rhonda so many nights in a row before you start going wacko.
Right. Fast forward to what?
Fast forward to go back to the beach.
Yeah, you got to remember, we were beach guys. I mean, we grew up in Malibu, home of the stars, you know, running
to
Johnny Carson and his buddies, you know. And
and the body surfing and the board surfing and all
that,
you know.
Before they were spraying chemtrails in the air.
And girls.
Yeah, I got my girls.
Definitely.
You know. Well, you said that where you're living in Malibu, you're just a few doors down from Johnny Carson.
Well, yeah, I mentioned that before we went on the show. You know, his name came up, and I go, I remember that guy. And we grew up on the beach in Malibu, thanks to my dad, Carmen Dragon, conductor extraordinaire, and all that Hollywood icon, symphony music dude.
Yeah.
You know, so we had a pretty fun life. At least I did. I had a great time on the beach, but I noticed that Johnny Carson moved in four doors down the beach from us one day, and this is, you know, I forget what year it was, whenever.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
Well, I think you weren't there. I think you were, I think you may have been in Hawaii at that point.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
It may have been mid-70s. So I went down, I saw him there lounging on the beach in front of his house, and I started walking towards him. I see him going back into the house real quick. I go, oh, this is interesting. So being the boisterous dude that I was, I go, welcome to Carbon Beach, Johnny. I'd like to welcome you. You know, I live right up the street. And he comes out like, huh? Is somebody talking to me? And I go, yeah. Well, and he was kind of a, you know, I don't know what, I don't think there's words that can explain his reaction to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I also had another similar experience with David Letterman, you know, about 25 years later up in Point Doom.
Oh, I never heard about that.
Well, no, I never told you.
No.
You know, we're writing a book here, right, Doug?
That's right.
Yeah, if anybody cares, Life in Malibu, circa 1950 to 1985 or 90. But, yeah, it's David Letterman, same thing. I mean, I was in a band called the Surf Punks, which I produced and engineered in Malibu. We had a quick 10-year run on that one. But yeah, I wanted to give David Letterman a T-shirt, a Surf Punks T-shirt, because, you know, it was the punk era, you know, it was punk band time.
Right.
And he panicked when he saw me at the door. I mean, oh, my God, I've been discovered. They found me, you know. So he actually thought that I was going to burn down his house or something. And I go, hey, man, all I want to do is give you a T-shirt. To, you know. And so a couple of days later, he gave it away on one of his shows.
Oh.
I loved it. That. You can't buy that kind of promotion.
No, you can't.
I never heard that story.
Well, you know, he used to do the weather here in Indianapolis.
I can believe that.
And when he would talk about hail the size of canned hams, and he did.
Yeah, he used to be like a country boy, you know.
It was shortly after that he loaded up his truck and he moved to Beverly.
Yeah, then he did move to Malibu after that, and that's when I intercepted him because there was nobody that I could. You hide from me in Malibu. That's another reason I moved out. I couldn't hide from myself.
Well, now you're up in the wilds of Oregon.
Yeah, I am, and I really like it.
I bet.
It seems like the Wild West up here for some reason.
Well, it is, you know.
Yeah, you got people with guns and stuff, and all sorts of things going on in the hills.
You know,
people that are missing. Who knows?
Oh, I know.
Anything can happen up here.
You got Sasquatches running around in the foothills and all sorts
of
things.
Yeah, yeah. got the Indian stuff happening. But no, I'm really happy to be here. Steve, I'd like to thank Steve Miller for building the studio for me, too. It's really nice of him to do that.
I bet the walls talk. I bet.
You know what? I don't think the walls do, and I'll tell you why. The stories that I've heard here is that he moved here when he was on top of his game in the mid-70s, early 70s. You know, he couldn't do any wrong, right, Steve? Oh, my God, here he is. He moves out to this little town called Williams, which is where I am, which is near Grants Pass by about a half an hour, and southern Oregon type of thing, sort of near the California border. And he built this place to serve his purposes, i.e. a world-class studio, rehearsal studio, whatever. It was on 500 acres. He wanted to put in an airstrip, which the county wouldn't allow him to do. And then he wanted to rehearse at 3 in the morning with the doors open, which the neighbors didn't like him doing. And he wanted to operate a commercial studio here, which you cannot do in this town because it's zoned agriculture. So what he did was he basically got run out of town from what I've heard and was never really able to realize the potential of the studio or what he wanted to do. He just said, I've had it. I'm out. Goodbye.
Well, good for Dennis Dragon.
Great for me.
Absolutely. We're talking to the Dragon Brothers tonight, everybody. We're going to take a short break. A few PSAs. We'll be back with them. Great hour. You're listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio.
Stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio.
Here's a hot topic about our wildlands and living with the natural role of fire.
Yard work is not just a matter of pride when you live in the wildland-urban interface. It's also about survival. Here are some FireWise tips that can help protect your home from wildland fire. Prune your trees 6 to 10 feet above the ground. Remove dead leaves and branches and dispose of them before fire season. Water your lawn regularly and store firewood away from the house. Be prepared for a fire emergency by having a plan for your family and pets. Learn more at our website and then sit back and enjoy. You worked for it.
This hot topic was made possible by the Teresa and H. John Hines III Foundation. Learn more about the natural role of fire, how to protect your community, and get the latest fire information. Visit the National Interagency Fire Center website at NIFC.gov. That's NIFC.gov.
Ranger Station, Ranger speaking.
Yeah, hi. I'd like to report a bear sighting.
Location?
In the forest, near the side of the road.
No need for alarm, sir. The forest is where bears live.
But this was no ordinary bear.
No ordinary bear?
Yeah, one second, I'm having a smoke taken in the view. Next thing I know, I am face-to-face with Smokey Bear.
Let me guess, Smokey had a tip for you.
He did. He must have seen me toss my cigarette on the ground. He told me never to do that because it only takes one spark to start a wildfire.
He's a smart bear. Did you know that 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans? That means 9 out of 10 wildfires can be prevented.
That's what Smokey said. I had no idea.
That's why Smokey's famous, and you're not.
Good point.
Get your Smokey on. If you see someone in danger of starting a wildfire, step in and make a difference, because 9 out of 10 wildfires are caused by humans. Brought to you by Smokey Bear, the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council. Learn more at SmokeyBear.com.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Welcome back to Larry Batson's Wild World here on Blog Talk Radio. Once again, here's your host, Larry Batson.
Hello, everyone. This is Larry Batson, and you are listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on this magical network known as Blog Talk Radio. We want to tell everyone that you can go into the Blog Talk site and listen to all the old shows in the archives, download them for free, including the one we have tonight with the Dragon Brothers and also past shows. So we encourage you to do that. Also become a friend of Larry Batson's Wild World, and that's all made possible at the Blog Talk site. Want to tell everyone that next week we'll have a guest host, the lovely Melissa Hovey from Ohio, will be hosting the show. I have a speaking engagement that I have to participate in, and our guest will be shark expert from Padre Island, Texas, Billy Sandifer. So be sure that you tune in next week, 10 o'clock as always, 10 to 11 here on Blog Talk Radio. We want to also thank Peter and Kathy Weimer, and We Want You Cottages. Visit today this fantastic resort on the banks of Chautauqua Lake, way up in western New York. And their addition to their website, iKids Fishing, promoting getting youngsters interested in the fantastic sport of fishing. Their website is www.wewantyou.com. Also, a big thank you to Radio Mom FM and the home of the Radio Mom Shop, where you can save 50, 60, 70% on vacations, restaurants, and a variety of other goods and services. And, hey, listen to my show, The 70s on Sunday, 12 to 7 each Sunday at radiomom.fm. Those are some of our underwriters that make it possible for Larry Batson's Wild World to be on Blog Talk Radio.
Swine flu, it's the bug that's bugging you. Swine flu, don't look back, it's too late to. Temperature at 104, too bad man, it's in your core. There ain't no good medicine, you're on your own with bathtub gin. Swine flu, it might end up killing you. Swine flu, don't look back, it's too late to. I ran to Pakistan but could not find my Uncle Sam. Pakistan say don't go home, cause Taliban ain't going home. The USA say we go back to useless game inside Iraq. Good God. We call Japan and they ask, will we pay a call to Kim Jong-il? The Chinese say we have a pill. Keep at bay, dear Mr. Ill. Praise God. Oh, the blues ain't nothing but a funky monkey hanging on. I said the blues ain't nothing but a funky monkey hanging on. Yeah. But I cannot say I've been there. My friends are still hanging on. There ain't no recreation, that's for sure. There ain't no recreation, that's for sure. There ain't no recreation, that's why Congress is a death. There ain't no recreation, that's for sure.
The fantastic sounds of the Dragon Brothers joining us tonight, Dennis and Doug. And, you know, guys, I was reading some of the stupid analogies of music, which always kind of bother me, but they had a Frank Zappa reference. But when I listened to Swine Flu and I heard that guitar break, that is so Zappa, that's absolutely amazing.
Well, you might blame me on that, because Frank Zappa and I are both Capricorns.
There you go.
And I got a call from him in the 70s when I was a hot drummer in the LA, session drummer.
Yeah.
And the call, and I'm not making this up, he goes, hey, I hear you're a pretty good drummer. I go, yeah, I'm okay. He goes, we're looking for a new one to replace our other one. Can you read music? And I go, no. He goes, okay, thanks. See you later. Click.
Well, I guess it's a happy one.
I never heard that story.
Doug, there's a lot of things that you haven't heard out of my mouth.
I believe it.
Well,
some that you don't need to hear.
Well, I want to also tell our listeners, and gosh, this is so prestigious, that Dennis won a Grammy for the audio engineering of the Record of the Year for 1975 that his brother and his wife put together, the Captain and Tennille, Love Will Keep Us Together.
Yeah, I happened to be there at the right place at the right time. They just got signed to A&M Records, and they were handed that song by one of the A&R people there who actually was doing his job very well, because that song is written by Neil Sedaka. And they said, we're not happy with our staff engineer at A&M, Dennis. Would you mind coming down and engineering this? And I go, sure, why not? So I hop out of my studio, which was in the bedroom, at the Malibu house above my dad's workshop.
Mm-hmm.
And from there into one of the hottest studios in L.A., A&M, and did that record for them and with them. And it turned out pretty well, I thought.
Well, it's got fantastic sound. I mean, it did. I mean,
yeah, I listened to that today, and I go, that sounds pretty good.
It almost
so I had a good run after that, but there's a negative side to that. Since that hit record of the year,
mm-hmm.
people would hire me after that thinking that if they had me as an engineer, that they'd have a giant hit record. And it doesn't work that way.
Well, you need a song.
But I made some money. So, okay, so the problem with talking to us, Larry, is that, you know, we've got so many stories that cover so much area, we could probably, you know, talk for a year and not cover the same ground. But after listening to that you know, the intro music, I think it's time to start talking about this record, because I'm looking at the clock tick by, and I think that I think people need to know a little bit how this record came about, and the term headline muse comes to mind, which is what these songs are, which is what Doug's writing is all about. So, Doug, I'm going to hand it over to you.
Well, Larry, headline muse, that's M like Mike, E-W-S, was just a play on, you know, headline news, and it was like about current events. So in the news, of course, was obesity, so
mm-hmm.
subsequently obese nation.
You're right.
And then there was the crisis in the Mideast, you know, Iran to Pakistan, but could not find my Uncle Sam, and that just kind of fell into place. And they just kind of dominoed one after the other. You know, swine flu was popular then. You know, everybody was panicked and paranoid. And that part of the chapter is all that's what that's about. But the other ones, like prophetic blues, I don't think you've heard that one yet, but those were written a while ago. So it was a combination of the old, the semi-old, and the new.
And then he hands it over to me,
yeah.
And then I put whatever production, you know, trips I could with what I had to work with here. I've always been a big Donald Fagen fan, mm-hmm. so there's elements of that there, since I had access to some great sax and horn players, trumpet players here in Oregon. And I've always liked the production of the Steely Dan things. It's very, very to the point. There's not excess. It's just
mm-hmm.
like everything means something, and I've always admired that production technique. So I was able to realize it with Doug's music, because there wasn't an electric guitar going through the whole song, just covering up a whole bunch of you know, area there. So the production, my production values that I put with this Doug's music, Doug had no idea what I was doing here. And when he heard it, I think it just knocked him out of his chair, because he had no idea what I was going to do with his music.
Oh yeah, yeah, it was incredible.
So it's really been fun working on this one. It's been great getting back with my brother to work, you know, on something of his tunes, because his tunes are really very accessible. They're very simple, right to the point. There's nothing really complicated about them, but yet leave a lot of room open for production craziness. If you know,
yeah, right,
all of that. So, you know, without analyzing it to death, I think, you know, hey, the music speaks for itself. If anybody's interested in it, we're not signed on any label. We put the thing out ourselves. It's on CD Baby. It's called The Profiteer by Doug Dragon, and that's how they can get a hold of it. We're not, you know, we're not great business people. We're musicians, and that's how we work it. You know, so.
Well, that has proven with the modern technology of the internet, and now a lot of music is being produced that way. And let's face it, guys, when you sell a CD, you don't have to split it up a billion ways.
Yeah.
Well, that's true, and then sue the record company to get paid.
Right. I mean, I think it's going to be I think you're onto what's going to be the future of the recording industry.
Well, I think it's back to the music. I mean,
oh, yeah.
You know, I watched American Idol last night, and I they really got some good singers and this and that,
yeah.
But everybody's looking good. Everybody's got perfectly white teeth. Everybody's very attractive. I mean, okay, that's that part of the business. We're not that. We're old dudes. Been around for a while. You know, I'm not too shabby. Doug's looking pretty good for, you know. But the thing is, we aren't image guys. We're music guys. We're musicians. You know, so it's back to the music. I think it should have never strayed.
Well, I think the MTV era started all this.
I agree.
And because, let's face it, in the 60s, bands like Canned Heat, they were not pretty.
Oh,
hey, yeah, Doug, yeah. Did you know one of those guys, Henry Vestine?
Yeah, he was the guitar player.
Didn't you know him?
I did.
Yeah, Doug knew the guy.
Well, they're amazing bands.
I didn't know Bear. Bear was the lead singer, right?
Right. Yeah, Al Haidt, I believe.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I used to jam with Vestine, and Larry Taylor was a bass player, and that goes back way into the early 60s when it was just getting off the ground, all that whole movement. And then, of course, semi-fast forward to the Year of Love or the, you know, that whole Woodstock thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then by then, the LSD was out of control, and, you know, the Beatles came out with Yellow Submarine, and, man, history was rewritten, you know.
Oh.
Yeah, so we, in our musical palette, we have all that information. So when I produce something, I can pull from any of this stuff because I'm still coherent as a human being. So I can pull back to the late 50s or the mid-50s for musical influences or things like that. So between us, Doug and I, we cover a lot of territory musically.
Uh-huh.
Well, it was a great era. I mean, I'm so thankful to grow up when I did. Sixth grade, Ed Sullivan, the Beatles. I mean, I've had so many musicians that said, hey, the Beatles, that was it.
Yeah.
That got the ball.
That was quite a landmark.
Oh, it was.
Yeah, I was working in a bar in 63, I think that was the year, and they closed the bar. They said, nobody's going to come to this bar tonight because the Beatles are making their debut in America on Ed Sullivan.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went and watched the Beatles, and I said, well, you know, on TV, I said, that's it. A whole new ball game has started. And then after that came the Birds, the Monkees, the Kinks, the Zombies, you know, you name it. And the British invasion was on.
Yeah, right, and then the Twin Towers with the planes crashing into them.
Yeah.
Well, that's really fast forward.
That was a whole new era, too.
Yes.
Oh,
yeah, the first day I heard Led Zeppelin, I had to pull the car over and just, I went into shock. I go, rock and roll has changed again. So, well, I remember those moments, the Beatles moments, the Led Zepp moments, you know, the people that really opened up whole new door. Even for me, when I heard the Ramones,
mm-hmm.
I go, uh-oh, another door just opened, anything goes, you know, and it did. And it was the beginning of the punk era and all that stuff.
Well, it was a fantastic era of music. It's just too bad that we had to live through disco.
Oh, I forgot about that.
That's true.
Oh, four on the floor,
disco.
Baby. Yeah, well, hey, you know, that was the Captain and Tennille era, though. That was the mid-70s.
Oh, it was. And, you know, now we know why they did so very, very well. I mean, because their music definitely, well, heck, they had their own television show.
Yeah, that's right. And it's available on DVD.
It is.
I call it the Poor Man's Sonny and Cher Show. Sorry.
Daryl didn't like that show too much.
No, they told him what to do and he did it, unfortunately.
Oh, my Lord. Well,
yeah.
I imagine he does not enjoy watching those DVDs then.
I don't think so.
I wouldn't know. Yeah,
but
well, at least one thing good came out of the 70s, the surf punk. So that, we started that in 1976. So that was a whole anti-disco statement, like, for, you know, the 180 degrees out.
Was that the era of the Talking Heads in Australia?
Yeah, I think, wasn't it? Late
70s? Wasn't that around that time?
I don't know. My memory's not that great.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, Francis,
but, you know, at least we're still coherent. We're still making music. And, you know, luckily, with the technology that we have, Doug can do his tracks over in Hawaii. I can do my stuff over here in Oregon, and we can put it all together. And, you know, amazing things can happen thanks to the net and fast speeds, you know.
Oh, it's incredible. I mean, and Doug, you had to be. I would like to have been in the room when you first listened to these tracks after your brother had been doing his magic upon them.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I was completely stoked. I mean, where he took it from where I had left it was just amazing because it made the tunes, you know. It actually made the tunes.
Well, and he was talking about the horns on, and that, to me, that is such, I love horns on albums. When you listen.
Yeah.
There was an old band called Chase years ago. I don't know if you remember them.
No,
of course, Chicago.
Well, yeah.
Oh,
that's,
yeah.
That's,
and then the magic of the horns in all the old Motown songs.
Oh, I agree.
And when that, when I heard that on the first track for our listeners, which is Good Time Woman, which is one of my favorite tracks on the album, it just to me it just exploded from the speakers.
That's what it's designed to do. It's actually made to smoke your speakers.
Well, if I had turned it up a little bit louder, I had the windows rolled down. I was listening to it, and we live out in the middle of nowhere, and the cows would watch me go by as I'm listening to the Dragon Brothers and Funky Monkey.
Good visual.
Swine Flu and Dr. Soul and Prophetic Blue.
Yeah, Dr. Soul.
Oh, and I love the Dr. Soul. That's
yeah.
Amazing music.
Yeah, make your check out the Dr. Soul.
That's a great line.
Yeah, to propagate rock, rock and roll.
Yeah, that is a fantastic line, Doug. When you sang that line, I thought, I was hooked. I was definitely hooked. I thought this is very, very special. What these two brothers have done, and I felt quite honored.
Well, that's real nice of you to give us a real positive feedback reaction, Larry. We really appreciate it, man.
Especially from your wild world, man. This is serious.
Well, I'm a music freak. I mean, because when we started doing this program a little over a year and a half ago, I'd have adventures on. I've had biologists, zoologists, and so forth. And I said, I love musicians. I'm interested in music, so. You know, it's my darn show, so part of my wild world is music, and I grew up in the 60s, and as we talked when Al Jardine was on a few weeks ago, I said, Al, you probably really didn't appreciate what was happening when it was happening. He goes, you know, we didn't.
Yeah.
We were too busy working.
That's true.
Yeah, they were very good to us, those guys. I got to know Carl and Dennis. I didn't get to know Brian too well. And I got to know Al pretty well, and Mike Love, of course. But they were, you know, they were very generous with their paychecks, and I was able to buy a new Volkswagen bus. And, you know, it was a good time for money.
Uh-huh.
And touring, the touring was funny. I remember the night we lit off a cherry bomb in one of the hotels, you know.
Only one? I carry cherry bombs with me at all times.
Yeah,
you do.
Steve Fields was rehearsing a song with some of his bandmates. And so I guess it was Dennis or I or whomever. We got the idea to fire off a cherry bomb, and, man, it just rocketed through the hallway at the hotel.
You never know how they're going to react to that. Some people like it, some people don't.
Oh, Stills didn't like it. He did not like it.
I love it.
Yeah, well, we were boarded up in our room so they couldn't break in.
Yeah.
I forgot. Oh, they were going to take us apart, man. It was
They were that upset. God. Oh, my Lord.
Yeah, those were the days, you know, trash and crash.
Well, you know, now...
So all that fun is also embedded in this music. We're still having some fun, you know, so I think that comes through, too, because if it isn't fun, I personally don't want to have anything to do with it.
Well, absolutely.
Yeah.
It does.
That's been my motto.
You know, I enjoy albums, and I still call them albums, that are entertaining. You know, I'm not interested in how many riffs that are played or how many chord changes are involved. I want an album that's entertaining, and the Profiteer is. I mean, it's fantastic. I love it.
Well, that's great to hear, man. Really, really appreciate the feedback.
Well,
most definitely.
Yeah, and
if anybody wants to find this thing, it is hard to find. It's not really. It's on CD Baby, and it's The Profiteer by Doug Dragon, and that's what we got. We got a website that tells about how the album was made and sort of reiterates a little bit about what we're talking about this evening, called www.thedragonsmusic.com. That's plural, thedragonsmusic.com. There's a lot of info on there, plus pictures, which are cool. You know, real people playing real music on real instruments.
No
concept, huh?
You know, that's pretty innovative.
Yeah, we came up with that one.
Especially
and
now with all this.
There's no computer manipulation either, so we don't fix everything. So just as in life, sometimes we make mistakes. Well, we have little mistakes in the album that are part of life.
Absolutely, and I think that's the beauty of it. You know the old story, very quickly. Was it the Baker Brothers and Michelle Pfeiffer was sang on the album, and they had asked her to perform the song live on the Tonight Show, and she was prepared to do that. Had you heard this story?
No, I haven't. I'm interested.
Well, I guess one of the producers of the album said, come down to the studios, and we want you to listen to the actual tapes of your vocals. Because my understanding is there's a computer for basically they can take, you can make 50 takes, and they'll pick the best word from every take for the final cut.
There are producers that do that, by the way. I have walked out personally on sessions where the producer wants to do that.
Well, they played her one of her raw tapes, and they canceled that appearance.
Man.
Well,
and, you know,
that was before they can take the computer and manipulate anything to anything you want now. So that was happening then.
Yes.
Right. It's always a joy to hear a singer actually being able to sing. That doesn't happen much these days. But I got to admit, I turned on the TV last night, and American Idol impressed me. There were some really good singers on there. So they are there. They're out there.
Oh.
Yeah.
And the production of the Idol now, my wife and I, we were watching before the program tonight, and they have really gone overboard with the production on some of these kids' songs. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Oh, no, I totally agree. I know that I forget the guy's name, the producer on there who's working with him in the studio.
Mm-hmm.
I should know his name, but, I mean, he's really good. And I totally agree with the direction he takes these people in. So American Idol's actually come a long way, and I hate saying that.
I really hate it,
but I got to admit it. It's really come a long way, and it's actually really good. The unfortunate part is that those people, as soon as they sign on, they're basically owned by the company.
yeah, and they're pretty much
so
puppets.
Business-wise, it works out real great for a handful.
Well, Jennifer Hudson didn't do too bad.
Nope, she did not.
She
and
really
David
made
Cook's
a statement.
Okay.
Movies and everything.
Yeah, and Dog Tree.
And I'm sure there's a big percentage going towards, not to her, coming off stuff she's doing.
So
I was going to ask you earlier, Doug, did you have any effects in Hawaii from the disaster in Japan, the tsunami, and any of that?
We had minor, Larry. I didn't realize until I watched the local news feed that there was some damage on the big island of Hawaii and miscellaneous parts, and some of it was in the millions, but it wasn't anything like what inundated Japan, you know. We did have some minor damage.
So is your property and everything okay? Or?
Well, I'm at 2,200 feet up on the slope.
It didn't get that.
Oh, you're on a mountain.
Yeah, I'm on the side of the Haleakala volcano.
Oh, my Lord,
yeah,
gosh.
He could handle a tsunami of 2,000 feet.
Lord have mercy. Well, it has to be absolutely gorgeous.
Oh, yeah. I'm not complaining.
And it has to be very inspirational.
Absolutely.
In fact, a friend of the show, Todd Rundgren, lives in Hawaii.
That's right. He lives on Kauai.
He does.
I even know where he lives.
You do?
Yeah, a friend of mine just played a concert with him on some sort of situation. He lives on Kauai on the northeast side. He's a cool guy.
He is. We love his music.
We got 1 minute to go.
Well, I know it. You know, it's been a fantastic hour. Gosh, guys, I thank you so much for taking the time, and I always put my guest on the spot. We would love to have you back on again because there's a million stories to tell.
Well, thank you, Larry. It was really a pleasure and a great experience.
Definitely. And we got stories, believe me.
Well, we want to hear more of them, so maybe one day if I can persuade you to take an hour out of your day, we'd love to have you back on. It's a fantastic show. We want to thank Tire Service Plus and owner Jerry Jones for taking care of America's auto maintenance needs. They keep our animal truck on the road, traveling thousands of miles with our wild animal ambassadors. Give them a call at 317-243-0700. What a dandy tonight, Dr. Day.
No kidding. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Excellent
show.
Thank
you.
Your
nice
CD is fantastic. I enjoy it more every time I listen to it. And as soon as I get off the phone, I'm going out to the garage and get my Lopez lightning bolt out of the garage, and I'm just going to sit on it for a few minutes.
Right on.
We'd like to see videos of that. We want to remind everyone that next week on the show, Billy Sandifer with our guest host, Melissa Hubby. She'll be in charge of the whole deal, so it should be a fantastic hour. Have a great week, everybody. Thanks to the Dragon Brothers. You've been listening to Larry Batson's Wild World on Blog Talk Radio. Good night, everybody.
Thanks for listening this week to Larry Batson's Wild World. Be sure to join us again next week at 10 p.m. for more of the latest outdoor and wildlife news and information, along with great tales from your host, world-renowned wildlife expert, Mr. Larry Batson. Tune in again next week for another exciting edition of Larry Batson's Wild World. Larry Batson's Wild World is a Batson Wildlife Educational Services production in association with Blog Talk Radio.